When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome to Betting Above the Rim here on this glorious Saturday morning. It is June 4th. It's June! The month of June means one thing and one thing only in the basketball world. It means the NBA Finals. Of course, the draft too on the horizon here, but we're going to take you through everything that we have to talk about with the NBA Finals right now. Of course, Boston up 1-0 here in this series. Game two, just over 24 hours away. And like I said, there is so many different ways to attack this. So many props out, so many different bets that you can place here. And that's what we do on Betting Above the Rim, is give you that winning edge. So I'll be here for the full 2 hours. John Shames sitting in our Midtown Manhattan studio. And my guy, James Young, will also be here. But before we bring him in, we got to do what we do, our opening tip off. All right, what is going on, JY? Happy to have you here with me today. I'm excited for the finals. We got a very good game one on Wednesday night, and I'm feeling fantastic right now about the direction of this series as a Celtics fan, of course, JY. Great to be with you here. What are your thoughts early on these finals? How are you feeling now that we have finally made it to the final round of this NBA postseason?
Of course you're happy that the Celtics won. You're glowing right now, bro. But that's all right. Listen. Game one, you know, feeling out process, you saw some things that you were thinking may not happen. One, you thought that the way the Warriors shoot the ball and stuff, they were going to outslug the Celtics. Well, the exact opposite happened. The Warriors threw a couple of punches, Celtics counterpunch, and then when the Celtics threw the knockout punch in the fourth quarter, there was no answer from Golden State. So that shows off the fact that there's no fear factor by the Boston Celtics. So we're lining ourselves up for what I think could really be a classic NBA Finals, and it could be, if Boston were to win it, could it be the passing of the torch from the Splash Brothers to Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum?
I like the way you think there, Coach. And maybe it's not the Splash Brothers to Jaylen and Jason. Maybe it's the Splash Brothers to the Splash Dads, right? Derek White, Al Horford, a couple other guys, Marcus Smart over there. Some new recent dads for the Celtics who really helped power them to that win, of course. So we take a look at that game board, 120-108, the final score in this one. And early on, Coach, it was the Golden State Warriors coming out in that first quarter very aggressive. They knew they had been there before on their home court. They wanted to make a statement, and Steph Curry did exactly that. 21 points in that fourth quarter, 6 three-pointers made. But it was the Celtics hanging around despite all of that, Coach Young. They end the quarter just down a few points. Derek White, a massive part of the Celtics hanging around there to start things out. In the third, Golden State really has a massive quarter. They outscored the Celtics by 13 points in that third quarter there. And then in the fourth quarter, it was the story of the Celtics and their defense tightening up. Curry goes cold. The Warriors' offense goes cold. A 17-0 run at one point by Boston. They close the game on a 40-16 run in that fourth quarter and get the outright victory, of course, covering as well as a dog. Coach, for Jason Tatum, we saw a bit of a different story than we've seen for a lot of this postseason. I want to direct our attention to him first right now. He only had 12 points, Coach. 3 for 17 from the field, a really poor game, but made a massive impact with his playmaking ability, finishing with 13 assists. I think we can all agree he had a poor shooting night as we welcome in our Sports Grid Radio audience here detailing some of the NBA Finals Game 1 action. John James, James Young here on Betting Above the Rim. Jason Tatum, Coach, struggled with his shooting in that Game 1, but I thought that he made an impact in other areas of the game. Do you think that it was a red flag for the Celtics that Tatum struggled, or do you actually think, kind of what I'm thinking here, that we had it was a good sign for Jason Tatum to be able to impact the game when his shot wasn't falling?
Well, what you have, Shames, is he took what the defense gave him. Yes, he shot the ball extremely poorly, but what they did is they got him into situations where, especially in the low post, where he was catching the ball with sometimes Steph Curry on him. And what did he do? He passed the ball. Justin Hutchman, who'll be on with us tomorrow, great guy, really breaks down the game as good as any young cat I know, gave me something interesting. 9 out of 13 assists for Jason Tatum were made threes. So that is him not forcing the issue, taking what the defense gave him, and he got to the threes. And the question's going to be moving forward is that the way Steve Kerr is going to play? Because as a coach, you do one of two things. Either you cut the head off at the snake, which means you just take away the top guy, which they tried to do in game one, or do you just let him do everything he can to score and then try to limit everybody else? Kind of what they did with Dallas. So it'll be interesting to see the chess match that is played. And as Ime Udoka, what do you do? Do you change what you do? Do you run your stuff to get your best shot? Or do you use your best player as a decoy for other people? So it's going to be a really intriguing chess match by the veteran Steve Kerr and the young coach Ime Udoka. And that's going to be where this series may be won between the two head coaches.
Yeah, I agree with you, Coach. It will be interesting to see how those adjustments happen on both sides. And I think Udoka has done an excellent job throughout this series. And it's one of the things that we saw in that game one script. Steph Curry, of course, coming out absolutely lights out. 21 points in that first quarter. And then you look up at the end of the game and he's only got 34, which is obviously still a 30-point game. But he really slowed down there in the second half. And a lot of that was the Celtics changing their defensive style in him. So we'll dive all into that, all into everything else you need to know here for the NBA Finals. How about game two? Are the Warriors in trouble? We'll talk about it here after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rolling along here on this fine Saturday morning, Betting Above the Rim on Sports Grid TV, Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 159, all of your streaming devices. We're here from 10 to 12 noon here. I am John James, and Coach Young is alongside me right now. So we just talked about some of these game one takeaways from the NBA Finals action on Thursday night. Coach, we hit on it briefly before we went to the break there, but Stephen Curry starts out the game on another level here, scoring 21 points in that first quarter, but only finishing with 34 on the game. A quiet second half, relatively speaking, for the sharpshooter. Coach, from your perspective, being a sideline man yourself, what was Ime Udoka doing towards the end of that game to make things harder for Curry and, of course, take away the open shots that really let him get in that rhythm early on?
Well, early on in the game, obviously, coming off of ball screens, they played one of two ways. They switched it, or they do what we call drop coverage. Drop coverage means the guy that's guarding the screener is backing up to not allow the ball handler to turn the corner. Now, what that does is that is just a kiss of death, either one, with Steph. They run so much action that they get you to switch to get matchups that they want. So early in the game, we saw a lot of threes open threes. There was one three, I think, in the second quarter. I'm not sure the first second, where Daniel Theis was guarding Steph on a drop coverage and was at the foul line as a three-point shot was made. We all know you can't play drop coverage on Steph. You can argue sometimes even if a switch is good, What do you have to do with Steph Curry? You have to get the ball out of your hand. So what do? They blitzed him. They doubled him. They hard-hedged him in the second half, forcing other guys to make plays. And when you get the ball out of Steph's hands, now you're asking guys like Draymond, who couldn't score, or a guy like Iguodala, or some of these other guys. Jordan Poole was very ineffective. So you're getting the ball out of the best player's hands, and you're making other guys beat him. So that was the way Ime did it. So the interesting thing to watch, folks, in this game number two as you play live is watch and see early on how they're defended. If you see Steph getting doubled early, the play is going to have to be the assist prop. If it's not, it's a drop coverage, then you got to be looking for the three-point shot. So it's really important, folks, that understand how defenses are playing these guys so that you live can affect it accordingly and get your live bets in and make a little bit of money.
It's a great point, Coach. And I think also when you look back at the Miami series, right, you talk about this idea of drop coverage. That's how you play against Miami, a team that struggles with, you know, with their shooters off the dribble in a lot of times. And you really got to, of course, they're a great three-point shooting team as well, but they don't have that shot creation ability that Golden State has. So I do see maybe why Boston came out a little bit slow in that first half and maybe doing a little bit of uncomfortable things compared to what they did against Miami. But Coach, you bring up that game two now and what we have to look forward to in that and some things that we should keep our eye out for. Right now, the spread is at 4. We saw the spread open up at 3.5 here, not really any change from the game one line. Very interesting, despite this massive comeback from Boston and kind of the proof in the pudding that they were able to get it done on Golden State's home floor. We're still seeing right now the Warriors a 4-point favorite. As I said, it opened at 3.5, went up to 4.5 yesterday, dropped the hook this morning. It's been bet back down to 4. Coach, do you think that that's an accurate assessment and a fair evaluation of how this game script is going to go? Or would you have expected to see a little more line movement after such a strong game one result?
No, I think it's right, Shamsie, where it right needs to be. I mean, these are two teams that are pretty evenly matched, and you want to give the advantage to the team at home that has the home game. But not only that, you have to give the advantage to the team that's more desperate. You got to look at this, folks. If this is as close to a must win for Golden State, because you could see it on the series price right now if you pull the graphic up, the Warriors were about a minus 160 favorite going into game number one. They're now a plus 140 going into game two. This is a must-win game for them. There's no way they can go back east to Beantown down 0-2 and expect this thing to go more than, I would say, 5 games. So right now, the play is going to be to look at Golden State to win and cover, send this thing back to Boston at 1-1, and then we're going to see where the series starts to really take shape in game number 3 Wednesday night.
I agree with you. I think one of the things that really has had my eye from the Boston perspective this postseason has been the lack of urgency when they have a lead. And it's a problem that's plagued them during the regular season as well. And if you remember, Al Horford even said at one point, yeah, when you have a lead, you tend to get comfortable after they weren't able to close out Miami in game 6 at home. And they said, when you're up in the series, you're feeling good, you're feeling comfortable. And I think that's one of the things we have to keep our eye out here for in game 2 is, do the Boston Celtics come out flat? Do they come out thinking, oh, we got this wrapped up? This is a long series, Coach, and I do not think it is anywhere close to being over yet. So, yes, I do agree with you. I think we're probably going to see a 1-1 split here, which brings us to an interesting discussion of the exact score after 3 games of this series. It's a market that's available on the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. And the number one price there that you can see is the Celtics up 2-1 at minus 115. Second is the Warriors at 2-1, that's plus 245. And then for the Celtics to sweep the first 3 games and go back for a game 4 closeout situation on their home court, that's plus 320. Coach, I think we can all say that it's like looking likely that the Celtics probably go down in game 2, just given what we know about urgency and the zigzag theory and everything like that. Is there any value on the Warriors potentially then stealing a game in Boston?
I think they could steal a game in Boston, but I don't know if it's going to be game 3. I think that crowd is going to be raucous. They're going to be out of their minds Wednesday night in Boston. You know, first home game for the Celtics, probably since the Doc Rivers era, I do believe, in the NBA Finals, you know, going back almost 15 years. So I see a scenario where you're going to have a really crazed crowd and environment. So to me, you got to look at it. Probably it's going to be a 2-1 to me deficit for Golden State going into game four. And then I think the zigzag theory comes to play, which means the most pivotal game of this series is going to probably be game number 5 in Golden State. Remember, NBA Finals is a 2-2-1-1-1 format. So game 5 will be in Golden State. Golden State's got to get 2 in the next 3. They get game 2. They got to get 1 between 3 and 4 to set up game number 5, which will be the big one in Golden State.
So, Coach, if we look at the correct score now for the entire series, and I certainly agree with you, I think that Game 5 is going to be pivotal. But we can take a look at these correct score numbers. The Celtics at 4-2, the shortest price on this board, plus 310. Interestingly enough, Coach, the second shortest price is the Warriors to win at 4-3. And that's only 40 cents of difference between the Celtics winning in 6 games. So, to me, obviously, that says that the Warriors in Game 7, if it goes to 7, are going to be considered massive favorites and booked as massive favorites as well. And I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot of public faith in Boston there, Coach. What do those odds tell you in that very short discrepancy between Celtics in 6 and Warriors in 7 as our two most likely outcomes?
That the Celtics need to be up 3-2 going into game number 6. So if it's 2-2... they're saying Boston's got to find a way to win game 5 in Golden State and go with that zigzag theory, because they don't believe that if they don't get him in 6, they don't think that they're going to be able to close out game 7 in Golden State. Remember, folks, I'm going to give you a stat that I was told and I saw a couple days ago. The Golden State Warriors are 1-8 in their last 9 NBA Finals games without Kevin Durant. This is a narrative, folks, that's going to continue to rear its ugly head for the Warriors if they continue to struggle. So it's going to be an interesting take here. I like the Warriors in 6 going in. I still am going with it. It's a risky proposition. I may bet it to go 6 games or less. That may be my play, because it could be 4-2 either way, because I don't see it being 4-3 Boston in 7 games.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I see that either, Coach. And one quick thing I want to point out on that board, the Celtics to sweep the series and the Celtics to win in 7, the same price at plus 600. So very interesting there, and something we certainly need to keep our eyes on. All right, we're going to keep going all around the NBA Finals here. Some prop perspectives up next with Coach Young. Just keep it right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Betting above the rim here on a Saturday morning, John Shames alongside Coach James Young for this first hour, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern time. And we're here. We're taking you all around the NBA Finals right now. We talked about Game 1 a little bit. We talked about Game 2 and the series price moving forward in this series. But now let's kind of zoom in a little bit, Coach, and let's talk about some of the best bets that we can start looking at now early on for this Game 2 situation. Of course, our focus is going to be primarily on some player props here, and we're going to find you some plus money as well. But I know Coach Young is an absolute ace when it comes to player props. So, Coach, you ready to dive in here?
Let's get it. Who are we going with first?
All right, the first man up, it wouldn't be anyone else. Jason Tatum, the Celtics star forward and the Eastern Conference Finals MVP of this season, the first recipient of that award ever, and it's Jason Tatum. His points prop, 27.5 right now. Assist prop, 5.5. Three-pointers made, 3.5. The under is juiced on that pretty heavily there, Coach. Of course, struggling mightily in that first game. He only had 12 points in game 1. It's his third time, though, scoring under 15 points in the postseason. He has done it once against Milwaukee, did it once against Miami as well. But on the season, Coach, this is a 27-point-per-game score, and we know he is more than capable of giving you 30 or 40 on a given night. When I show you that Jason Tatum prop board, and, of course, those plus-money player performance doubles at the bottom there as well, if we bring that back in at some point. But, Coach, a lot of interesting numbers, some pretty high props for Jason Tatum. Anything stand out to you early on here nearly 24 hours before the game.
Right off the bat, I'm looking at the points prop. Jason Tatum, three times during the playoffs, has scored under 20 points in a game. All three games, the game after, 30-plus. So right now I'm looking at over 27.5 for Tatum. I do think that the Warriors may adjust. We'll talk to Antonio about this a little bit next segment, what he thinks. But I think they will adjust and they will let him get his. So I'm still looking at him to go over his 27.5 points. The other one I'm looking at, interesting left, is I'm actually still going to look at his assists. 13 assists in game number one. I know that 9 out of the 14 were from threes, but I still think that hanging that at 5.5 to me, Shamez, I still think that's a little bit low from a guy who can absolutely pass the ball really well and has really done a, even though you could say he's 5 for 13, doesn't force a ton of shots, gone over 5.5 assists in 3 out of his last 4 games. So, and he typically gets to at least 4. So I think he can get still a 30-point, 6-assist, 5-rebound kind of game. So take a look at that for Jason Tatum for game number 2.
Yeah, that's an interesting look, Coach. And I really do like that point about his bounce-back spots, because that has been the case. We've seen him respond in massive fashion every time that he's had one of these really poor showings in the playoffs. One number that has my eye out of those performance doubles on there is actually the double-double prop, which, of course, he hit last game and Boston won as well. That's listed at plus 630, which I think is tremendous value for a guy that can get double-digit rebounds or get you double-digit assists as he did last game. And even when he's shooting poorly, he's not going to go under 10 points, Coach. So I think that is some excellent value there. And we can now spin it over to the star on the other side of the floor. And it was a very different story for Stephen Curry in game one than it was for Jason Tatum. He came out hot, 21 points in that first quarter, ending with 34. For tomorrow, Coach, his points prop set at 27.5 right now, 28.5, excuse me. And the assist prop, 5.5. That is a massive three-point prop, over 4.5 three-pointers made there. But, of course, we know that Curry had 6 in the first quarter, so it's certainly not out of reason there, Coach. I think the assist prop is an interesting place to look, knowing that Boston is blitzing him. And I know you and I have talked about that a little bit off air. Do you think that there's any other spots on the board there, or are you really smashing that assist prop right now?
I'm crushing that assist prop. I'm crushing it. I'm crushing it live. I'm crushing it pregame. And if he gets out the gate slow and even drop it to 4.5, I may double back and go back to it again. Remember, folks, yes, remember, the way they played him second half is when he had to pass the ball more because of the coverage they were playing in the screens. He still got the 5. 3 games before that, 9, 8, 11. I could see that assist prop going off and him hitting it easily. The other reason why is I think there's going to be a concentrated effort to try and get Klay Thompson more involved offensively in this game. So the way I would look at it is maybe the assist prop one way for Curry, but then I would look at, honestly, the points prop possibly for Klay Thompson at 19.5, or better yet, you guys know how I love Andrew Wiggins at 16.5. I do think it's going to be get Klay going early. Wiggins gets his. I'm concerned that maybe he goes under the points prop, Steph, but goes over the assist prop.
Yeah, those X-factor players for the Warriors, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, going to be very important for them to get involved. Wiggins, of course, played pretty well in that first game, although he did have a couple of pretty bad mistakes that I saw, Coach. So he needs to learn how to take care of the ball a little bit more, but some good defense and some good shot making. And on the other side, one of the big X-factors for Boston is Jaylen Brown. And we've actually seen Jaylen Brown serve as one of the most consistent pieces of the Celtics in this postseason run. And it's actually funny, Coach. Ben and I were talking about this yesterday on the morning after. Jaylen Brown has scored 24 points exactly in 4 out of his last 8 postseason games here. So talk about consistency. This is a guy who you really know what you're going to get every night. And by the way, so does the book. And that's why they're continuing to book his points prop at 24.5. I mean, that's as sharp as it gets, Coach, right there. And we can see the over has the juice there, probably because Jaylen had such a strong game in that fourth quarter the other night. But we can see some of the other props, 3.5 assists. That's a pretty low number there. 2.5 three-pointers made already. I'm saying that could easily go over because he comes out firing from 3, and he likes to get those shots up early in the game. And then some of these performance doubles, 25 points is plus 320 there if Boston can win as well. So some really good value on that, considering his points prop is hanging there at 24.5, Coach. I mean, I think that's catching my eye right off the bat here.
Well, the way I would play with Jaylen Brown is this, because I think Tatum's going to try and go off early. I would wait on his points prop. And because that 24.5, you said it best, 5 of the last 8 games, 24 on the number. Let that thing drop to 23, even 22.5. It gets off to a slow start. Hammer it when once it drops to 22.5. I would take a look at his assist prop. Jaylen Brown is a sneaky good passer. You know, has gone over 3 straight games. And I do think that he had some uncontested blow-by dunks in game number one. I think if he starts to drive, I think they close the floor and he finds guys. So to me, that assist prop at 3.5, I'd like him to go over that. So I would play the assist prop pregame. And then the points prop, I would go live, let it drop to 23.5, maybe even 22.5. It gets off to a rough start the first 6 or 7 minutes, then hammer it, because there'll be a lot of times during the game, James, where they will try to get one of the two of them rest. And when Tatum goes out, Brown becomes the primary scorer, and I think that's where you can get him. Get him live with the points prop.
It's a good look, Coach. And before we dive into a very important piece for the Golden State Warriors, I want to stick with the Celtics real quick here. And let's talk about one more person who's been a very important piece for them on the offensive and defensive side, Al Horford, Coach. And in that game one, we saw Horford, of course, scoring over 20 points for, I think, the third time this postseason. His scoring has been really good so far. And in game two, the prop is only at 11.5 for his points. Of course, we do know that he's the type of player that has the ability to give you a single-digit scoring output and still make his impact known on the game, but maybe not fill up the box score quite as much. I don't think any of us are expecting Coach Al Horford to sustain a 20-point-per-game average, but is that 11.5? That looks – I mean, that seems low to me right off the bat.
I would be a little careful with that, because the other two times or three times he's gone over 20, he's gone single digits each of those times. The one I'll be looking at is the rebound prop at 8.5. I do suspect that you may see more of the small ball depth lineup with Draymond at the 5, and you can't expect Robert Williams or Daniel Theis to be guarding him. So you would think that it could be Al Horford at the 5, and then possibly Grant Williams at the 4. So I think you go with all reliable with the rebounds at 8.5. I would stay away from his points prop, because just looking at what has transpired in the past, 3 after 16 versus one game in the Miami series, 5 after 20, another game in the Miami series, had 30, then had 8 the next game. The only outlier is when he had 22 and 30 in back-to-back games versus Milwaukee. So I do think you see some regression. I could see him going under it, but I do think the rebounds are the safer play with Al, because they're going to need him to rebound, because we don't know what we're going to get out of Robert Williams. And if Kevin Looney doesn't play a lot, that means Robert Williams doesn't play a lot, which means Horford's got to go to the 5 spot.
Robert Williams has really struggled, in my opinion, Coach. He has not looked the same since coming back from that knee injury. He had a couple good games here and there, but overall he looks hobbled. He looks banged up and not encouraging. So I do agree with you. Horford's going to have to do the dirty work there. And another guy who's doing the dirty work, but on that Golden State side, is Draymond Green. And we saw, of course, for many years, Draymond Green, a massive part of this Warriors' success and really a bona fide scorer in the finals at some points. Remember, he had 32 points in Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals, which, of course, Golden State lost. But, Coach, it's a different Draymond Green that we have here now six years later after that point. He's not really much of that scorer anymore. He does hunt for his shot now, or at least we saw him hunt for his shot in Game 1, attempting 12 field goals, but only converted on 2 of them. That to me is not going to cut it for Draymond Green. Quickly here, Coach, only about 15 seconds, but Draymond Green, any of those props catch your eye?
I think they're going small ball lineup, depth lineup. Look at the rebound prop. Can't trust him to shoot it. Draymond, you can't shoot. If they leave you open, don't shoot it. Pass the ball.
Do not shoot it. I think we got to give some of that same advice to Kevin Walsh, but we don't need to talk about him badly right now. Right here, back on Betting Above the Rim after.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
back here on a Saturday morning, Betting Above the Rim on Sports Grid TV. John Shames here alongside Coach Young for this first hour. And in this segment, we have a fantastic guest bringing us a scout's eye, the scout's eye of Mr. Antonio Williams here with me and Coach Young for the next 15 minutes or so. Antonio, always a pleasure to have you on. Needed you here for the NBA Finals to get your expertise, for you to give your breakdown, the X's and O's, and we're all here to appreciate and nerd out, if you will. So, Antonio, thanks so much for being here today.
John, I appreciate you, my man. Of course, as you said, any opportunity to nerd out about basketball, I'm down for it. Coach, it's great to see you. I can't wait to hear your insight as well.
Coach was quite excited as well when he knew you were coming on. He's like a little kid. When you guys get to talk about basketball at that level, you guys get to talk about it. I think we all learned something. So let's do that right here, right now, Antonio. And let's start out by talking about what we saw in the past. Before we dive into the future here and talk about game two, which is going to be tomorrow, we saw game one of the NBA Finals go in a direction that maybe not a lot of people were predicting. The entire ESPN panel before the show picks the Warriors to win game one. They pick the Warriors to win the series. And yet it's the Boston Celtics withstanding a massive third quarter run from the Warriors, where it really looked like the doors had just blown off the game and the Golden State was ready to take a massive lead. But in the fourth, Boston's defense starts grinding down and they start hitting shots. And the conjunction of those two things, going 9-for-12 from three and, you know, a 17-0 run route of the Warriors before they get a couple points on the board there in the fourth quarter. Obviously a massive win for the Boston Celtics there. Antonio, what do you make of that game one performance by the Celtics? And do you think that the Warriors might be in a little bit of trouble here, knowing that they came out swinging and still came up short?
Well, as you said, John, it's always a little bit discouraging when you hit someone, you know, take a boxing term, hit someone with your best shot and they don't fold. It could be something that psychologically it could work on you a little bit. But I think Golden State has the experience and they know that this is going to be a long series. For me, I picked the Warriors at 7. And so I know this is going to be a long series. I know it's going to be a lot of back and forth. The thing that really stood out to me watching this was when you watch the Celtics, this was all about grit and grind. And I know Memphis borrows that term, and rightfully so. But Al Horford at 35, this is, I think, maybe the second most points of a person in terms of his age debuting in the NBA Finals in NBA history. You know, he scored, and then also, too, it's the most threes for someone debuting in the Finals in NBA history. So he's a grit and grind guy at 35, a guy that was on the shelf in OKC, and people thought, well, maybe it's Al done. So then you also have Derek White, grit and grind guy that didn't have any Division I offers coming out. Marcus Smart, grit and grind guy, a guy that needs to get some credit for the improvement that he has shown in his game as it relates to shooting the basketball. His decision-making, people were talking about, well, he's trying to be a hero. He made great decisions in this game as well. So lots of grit and grind. And then, of course, Jason Tatum did not play well from an offensive standpoint, having 12 assists. So the Celtics, with their grit and grind, and also I think it bears mentioning as well, Golden State's building. When this thing was the Oracle, used to be called the Roracle, when they would go on those runs like they did in the first period and then in the third, it would get so loud in that building that it'd be overwhelming. Now they are playing in a palatial estate. So those runs are completely different when you're the road team now. They feel different. The fans aren't right on top of you. Maybe it's a different type of clientele because the ticket prices are higher. So those are the things that really stood out to me when I was watching this game.
You know, Antonio, you're right about that. We used to call them as coaches nails and glue guys. And that's what makes the Celtics special, because they have those other pieces that complement a Tatum and a Brown doing the guts and glory, the rebounding, the extra pass, the diving on a loose ball, the rotation, stuff like that. Talk to me a little bit. I noticed in the first half they were playing a lot of drop coverage and switches on Steph, which I thought was a recipe for disaster. And Ime smartly went to more of a hard hedge or a blitz on Curry. Do you think that's something that Ime may start game two with and kind of say, we're not going to let Steph get hot in his building. We're going to make other guys make the shots early on in game number two.
I do, Coach. That was an astute observation on your part. I do think they're going to do that, especially what Golden State does is they put Draymond oftentimes in that pick and roll. And what it forces you to do from a defensive standpoint is make a decision on who you're going to guard, because Draymond and Steph can both make decisions at a high level. The problem with that with Golden State is if Draymond is not looking to be aggressive offensively, or if he's not making shots, that's the problem when you run into that. And I think Golden State, well, the Celtics actually made a concerted effort to make Draymond a scorer, and that worked in their favor. So I completely agree with you. I think what it also does as well, Coach, is because if they're not getting offensive rebounds from Draymond when he puts one in occasionally, or if they're not getting offensive rebounds from Kevon Looney, what happens is Golden State doesn't get any paint touches if they're not driving to the bucket. So that makes Jordan Poole that much more important when he is driving to the bucket and getting finishes at the rim, because that is the only way they get those paint touches. So to your point, if they're going to blitz Steph, Poole has to be much more aggressive off the dribble and scoring at the rim in order for Golden State to really open up the floor for Steph and for Klay as well, because Klay can't have 14 points in the game and Golden State expect to win.
Just follow up with that. In regards to blitzing, especially Steph, to make Draymond the decision maker, what are your thoughts on maybe making Andrew Wiggins as the screener? Because if you blitz him, that is someone who can knock down the three and drive it to the hole. Because to me, I think Andrew Wiggins has been the second best player consistently for Golden State the last two series. Can you see them maybe getting him into the screen action, which then gives him the shot to make his points prop and also his assist prop if he's driving the lane and finding out shooters as he drives?
Absolutely, Coach. I think it places, that's a great observation as well, because I think it places the Celtics in emergency situations defensively. That's Golden State sort of, that is their secret weapon. When they make you operate from a defensive standpoint in emergency situations for an entire game, that is taxing physically and it's also taxing mentally. So to your point, what Wiggins can do, yes, he can drive to the rim and he can finish athletically and acrobatically and have those emphatic finishes at the rim, but he can also attack a closeout and make a decision. So with that being said, that's one of the things that you want to do. You also want to make Jaylen Brown, you also want to make Jason Tatum play defense as well. So you want to make sure that you don't strategically give them the option to hide one or two of those guys. So I agree with you wholeheartedly in what you said there, Coach, for sure.
Antonio, we talked a little bit about some of these adjustments that Boston is making and how they're kind of defending Golden State and how Golden State can maybe unlock or counter some of that. On the other side, though, Golden State, I think, did a really excellent job of putting Tatum in tough spots and making him make some uncomfortable actions maybe that he wouldn't normally make in that game one. I want to ask you, from a perspective of, right, you're watching the X's and O's of the game, do you think that the struggles of Jason Tatum, was that more so on him having a poor game or was it more on Golden State? And if it is on Jason Tatum, what do you tell a young player like that after his first finals game where he's clearly nervous? How do you help him bounce back in that spot?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, if I can say that, John. And because sure. Golden State, of course, did a great job of sort of scheming up and game planning because they're so connected defensively. Steve Kerr does a great job. That's one of the things that they are underrated in all of their finals runs. They are one of the top teams defensively in the league. And you can check all the statistics from all the years where they had those great runs. That's one of the things that's underrated about them. Again, being connected defensively. I will say this. If there was one series where they really missed James Wiseman, it's this one. Because being able to protect the rim and also getting easy shots in the paint. So James Wiseman is a big, big loss for them in this particular series, in my estimation. If you're Jason Tatum, one of the things, again, putting on my scalp cap because I love this, and this is all objective. I know we talked about this with Luka. This isn't saying I don't love Jason Tatum, because I absolutely do. If I'm putting on my scalp cap, and Coach, you can attest to this as well, one of the things about Jason Tatum, as he sort of ascends to that elite player level, he has to go to the free throw line more. And that was one of the things that when you were scouting him when he was coming out, you looked at and you said, you know what? For him to matriculate from very good to great, he's got to go to the free throw line more. And you started seeing it in stretches. And I get it. He's only 24 years old. So I don't want to say, you know, this guy's this finished product and all those things. I don't want to try and say that. But at the same time, if you're looking for that area of growth for him, he's got to start getting to the free throw line more, getting more easier, getting easier buckets, seeing the ball go in the rim, and then it sets up everything else. So I would expect for him to be more aggressive off the rim, off the dribble, getting to the free throw line, you know, utilizing his spots in the mid post, getting fouled and getting some easy looks.
You know, to follow up on that, a couple of things, you know, and you're right about him getting to the free throw line. You saw them running a lot of wing ball screen switches and getting Steph involved in the defensive action and making him guard in the low post. And it seemed like to me Tatum was waiting for the double team. Now, listen, he had 9 of his 13 assists were made threes. But to me, I think I need to see him be a little bit more decisive, get the ball right away, and I think he can beat the double team or just turn and shoot over Steph and have no problems because he's got about 6 inches. But to follow up on that, defensively, we saw Golden State send that double team, and they get burned. You obviously know the scout, me as a coach. You got one or two philosophies. Number one, you limit everybody else, and then you let the guy go off. Kind of like the Luka effect. Or you send a double team, don't let that best guy beat you, and then it follows up with all the open shots and the threes that they hit. And they were like step into threes, especially in the fourth quarter. Do you anticipate that Steve Kerr will switch it up and maybe say, you know what, we're going to make Tatum, let Tatum get his, and we're going to try to limit everybody else? Do you think that could be Steve Kerr's adjustment for game number two tomorrow night?
I do, Coach. And what I also watch when I see this as well, especially when you have a guy that may not have as much experience in the finals, even though the Celtics have gone through their deep postseason runs with that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum sort of core, Marcus Smart as well. One of the things that I look at when I watch this is you don't want to give a great player with a high basketball IQ a steady diet of anything. Golden State does a great job of adjusting. So I do expect what you're saying, Coach Kerr, to make that adjustment. But I also don't know if he's going to give Jason Tatum a steady diet of this is what we're going to do every single time down, because Jason Tatum, Ime Udoka doing a great job as a coach, and the Celtics have high basketball IQ guys. If you give them a steady diet of one thing, I'm sure they'll take advantage of that. So I expect to see that switch. But I expect to see multiple switches throughout the game as Golden State tries to even up this series.
Fantastic breakdown, Antonio. As always, you really dive into the nitty-gritty, and that's why we appreciate you so much. Always a fun time when we get to basketball nerd out with our guy, Antonio Williams, host of the Antonio Williams Show. Keep it right here. We'll be back for you, Big Dummy, after the break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
One more segment in hour one of Betting Above the Rim here on Sports Grid TV, Sirius XM, channel 159, all across your streaming services. John Shames here in our Midtown Manhattan studio alongside Coach James Young from his New Jersey studio. Only for two more minutes here, and you know what that means. We couldn't let him get away without giving his signature segment, and that's the Big Dummy Award, the You Big Dummy Award. Coach, I know there was a lot of debate about who was getting this award today. What did we end up going with? I mean, feel free to just go off here. I'm just going to sit back for now.
You know, a lot of things going on this week, but there was a little beef that started between, you know, one of the best basketball players in the world and one of the top media guys in the world. And I decided that I'm going to defend KD. Your big dummy, hate to say it, goes out to one and only Stephen A. Smith. Why, you ask? Stephen A. Smith had the audacity to come on his show on that four-letter network and give a four-letter comment about how Michael Jordan was bad for basketball. I mean, what is happening, people? I mean, this guy's sitting there saying, oh, but he's the greatest all time. But he was bad for basketball. But Steph Curry has been great for basketball because of team play. I mean, Stephen A. Smith, do you understand, like, what you just said? That you sat there, you talked about Michael Jordan being bad for basketball. Let me tell you something, homeboy, with your $8 to $12 million contract ESPN, you wouldn't be talking basketball if it wasn't for Michael Jordan. People wouldn't be getting, Russell Westbrook would have been getting paid $47 million to brick shots if it weren't for Michael Jordan. We wouldn't have international players in this NBA because of Michael Jordan. You wouldn't have, the dude's got 6 rings, and the last time I checked, 2 of them, he didn't even take the last shot. He passed it. So if I were you, Mr. Stephen A. Smith, before you trash the GOAT, know what you're doing, you big dummy.
Boom. Big dummy is Stephen A. Smith for this week. Coach Young, great job here on the way out. Thanks for being here. I will be back for this next hour, Betting Above the Rim, Hour 2.